Hello, and you're very welcome to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our political team here in Leinster House, where I'm joined by my colleagues. By the way, I'm Áine Lawler. I'm joined by my colleagues, Micheál Lehane and Paul Cunningham. We're talking on Thursday, the day of that poll in the Irish Times. Is it? I mean, looking at the kind of lead that Catherine Connolly has there, nearly 2-1 over Heather Humphreys, is it all over?
It's a very substantial lead that she has. I suppose there's something a little bit cautious inside me saying it's not over till it's over. And no doubt both candidates are going to go out and continue to campaign. But it is a commanding lead. And I think to a certain extent that Heather Humphreys needs an event at this stage, something which we don't know, which changes the dial. I think if it was just to proceed, if the campaign continues in the same vein, then it's hard to see how such a big gap. I mean, we have had in the past in political times rogue polls, but even still, the two previous polls had Heather Humphrey or behind by around 9 or 10 points. Yeah. It seems as if that's extending, seems as if it's going one way, but there's always something that can happen out of the blue. Ask Sean Gallagher.
How do you read it, Micheál?
Yeah, I think if you take the kind of mood in Fine Gael, they do seem a little bit taken aback by the scale of this poll, because just to illustrate once again how Leinster House is such a bubble, there was this feeling, particularly when you had people like Mary Harney and others coming out during the week, that the centre and the establishment were rallying together behind Heather Humphreys, and that was going to be reflected in the poll, and that was going to narrow, maybe not get anywhere near equal, but it was going to narrow, but it has gone the other way. So I think that presents a real challenge going into the final weekend in momentum and energy terms just for the campaign itself. And that's very evident now.
And is there, I mean, obviously Jim Gavin's still polling at 5% in that Irish Times poll. But is there anyone in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? I was just thinking back all those budget speeches from Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath, and the theme every year, year after year, the centre must hold, the centre is holding. Is there a sense, both in Fianna Fáil and in Fine Gael, that somehow in this campaign so far anyway, with 1 week to go, that the centre is slipping away from them?
Yes, and I suppose wasn't there a kind of a neat logic there, and they were going back to the 1990 poll as well, that what you were going to see was perhaps the Fianna Fáil candidate, it seemed after the first week or so, would transfer to Heather Humphreys, and that suddenly went out the window because of events, and there didn't seem to be any way of recovering that. Just equally on a side note, unrelated but to the budget, I think the postmortems are already beginning in this. You can see the Fianna Fáil review is in train now, but I think someone in Fine Gael too now beginning to whisper today, well, maybe if it had been held before the budget, this could have been a different type of campaign and a different outcome. There was a request apparently at some point in the summer to hold that presidential election before the budget, but it wasn't. It wasn't agreed to ultimately within government. So that kind of stuff's already happening, which show that some people are moving to post-mortem.
And people within the Connolly campaign, people in Sinn Féin, talking about a movement more than a campaign. Certainly, we haven't seen the combined left. I mean, obviously, there are voices like Alan Kelly and so on. But broadly,
Mary Upton.
Exactly. And within the Greens as well.
Yes.
But still, we haven't seen the left combine together and have the scent of victory in its nostrils with 1 week to go. It's almost as if it would give the left, goes back to that, you know, row at the start of the Doyle about the voting rights and this whole sense of the new blocs emerging in politics.
But I think there is a huge desire within those parties of the centre-left and further that they are able to keep Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or both out of the Oras. They've had Michael D. Higgins, who's reflecting their views for the past 14 years. They don't want to hand it over. To a certain extent, we've had from Catherine Connolly herself, with the withdrawal of Jim Gavin, saying this now sort of clears it for everyone. You've got, on the one hand, the opposition, on the other hand, their government. But it isn't really just as straight as that. I think you're right. They do have the momentum. It looks as if it's going one way. But if you're taking a step back and looking at the campaign from a wider point of view, like, few could have predicted the Fianna Fáil omni-shambles that has happened. And then if you're looking at the centre-left, there wasn't another anti-government voice which entered the field. And obviously Marie Steen comes to mind, which could have possibly, not saying it would, but possibly changed that first preference going to Catherine Connolly. So there's like a constellation of things coming together to lead us to this point where, as we say, commanding lead and the big mo is behind those parties.
And what was striking about that poll as well, wasn't it, today, was the fact that so many people polled were dissatisfied with the slate that's there.
Yeah, 49%. And so that's a very clear sentiment. Speaking to TDs around here from the government parties, they're surprised that's not higher, because that's what they are getting all the time now, they say, that sentiment. And it's unsurprising in some ways, because even if you go back to 97, you had more candidates in the race. I mean, this essentially was opened up from that point onwards. Yeah. But decisions taken this time to go a different route. And that definitely has annoyed a lot of people. And whether you see the outcome of that in things like the Spoil the Vote campaign, it does seem, judging by that opinion poll as well, a curious thing to measure. The fact that it's being measured at all, that's coming in at somewhere around 6% on the poll. I mean, I think in the last two presidential elections, it was just above 1%. So that's telling a certain story as well.
But coming back to that question, I think, and in other words, I didn't answer your question fully, was that...
Oh, I thought you did. It's
more a few more things to say.
After the lads on the bus say.
But just those United Left, it's not just the fact that they are going to be able to, they hope, secure the Oireachtas. It's also that they've been able to work together. And even though they do have differences and some of them are quite deep, they've been able to work together effectively. And does that also give a momentum beyond the race for the presidency, that if they can replicate that again, then it's possible that finally, ultimately, that either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael are not going to be in office.
Because there was a political logic, wasn't there, that the presidential election doesn't really have any reflection or relation to the other elections. Labour saying, if you look at Michael D, well, that's very clear in their case, it wasn't beneficial to them. But I mean, it is going to be clear that this would be a win, and it would be a significant win, and it will have damaged. I mean, if it will have damaged Micheál Martin significantly, we can see that. But also, I think if Heather Humphreys is polling just somewhere around where the Fine Gael vote is, well, it hasn't been a great presidential election all of a sudden again now for Simon Harris. But he can, of course, point that she was a replacement along the way.
Paddy Tobin was saying that Aintha will be putting forward a motion on changing the nomination process. There was a Citizens Assembly recommendation, I think, on the number that instead of just four councils, you would have X number of councillors, the way you have 20 members of the Oireachtas, and you could open up the nomination procedure that way. In terms of the public mood, there's a feeling, isn't there, that somehow the centrist parties, the government parties, they misread the mood here. They misread the appetite.
Or is it a question of misreading? They probably thought that the process would work. And quite clearly, through the incidents that we've just described, Raid McGuinness pulling out, Fianna Fáil crashing and burning, others not getting in, that we've left with two candidates, and you've got that poll, which says at least, or suggests, at least half of the electorate feel they don't have a voice, and possibly maybe more, and that's going to drive this election campaign. And I think it is something which is going to crystallise in a change. I think it's something that is, because even if you're looking, as Micheál mentioned, that Fianna Fáil wants to change the manner in which its selection is going. So that's at least one change that's coming, and I think probably others will follow.
Yeah, and I suppose if you look at this, what was at the beginning of this, what we thought Micheál Martin's natural tendency here was not to run any candidate. But that became impossible given the strength of feeling in the party and given the fact that Bertie Ahern was gearing up for a tilt at this. So for all those reasons, that changed. And of course, that put a degree of caution then across the councils as well. So there were a lot of different things that created a fairly unique situation.
But there's another thing as well. I mean, the keepy uppies, do you know what I mean? Ending up on Australian TV. Do you know? Sometimes a person's campaign seems to meet a particular moment, and that clicks with people.
Yes.
And it's hard to plan for, it's hard to predict. Every campaign would dream of it. But it is a key thing in terms of mood and momentum.
And
anyway.
Then Catherine Connolly revealing during the week that she actually never played football. She calls it football rather than soccer as well, which is interesting. She played other sports, but just played on the street in Shantilla. That's where she played her football. She's the ultimate street player. The Eamon Dunphy vision of soccer, really, you know, that's what she is, but never played it officially or formally.
And we learned her cat's names.
Well, we didn't learn the cat one and cat two. It's almost Kafkaesque, isn't it? Give the characters no actual names because it's more illustrative of universal alienation in Kafka's case. I don't know what it is in Catherine Connolly's case, but in Heather Humphreys, we learn the names of her pets, and they're it may not be coming to play now, but her dog Rusty, a miniature Yorkshire Terrier, he was going to move to the Oireachtas, as was her husband and as well, Eric. But Buddy the cat was going to stay in Monaghan, 100%.
Looking after the cattle. Mm.
Yeah, well, cats decide where they're going to go themselves, don't they?
But Cat 1 and Cat 2 apparently are moving, along with some bees. Catherine Connolly's husband is a beekeeper, and there will be bees in the Oireachtas.
I think they've got bees already in the Oireachtas, so there might be double bees.
Galway bees.
Indeed, I've actually tasted the honey from a jar in the Oireachtas, and
have
it was very
you?
Nice. I have, yeah. And there was none of that sort of Chesterfield Avenue smoke in it. It was Good stuff.
Did you get it or did you steal it?
I can't tell you how I got it. It's a mystery. I want to, you know,
all right,
put a sense of mystery into this podcast.
Is he the lad who was stealing the honey?
That was me clambering over at midnight.
the motion of confidence, as it turned out in the end. What did you make of it all?
Well, I mean, I think it was very strange what Padraig Tobin did. The fact that he flagged it in absolute terms so early in the week, and the government did something, which they say always what we do, we respond. But of course it wasn't. It was very unusual to preempt a no confidence motion when you don't have the wording. I think it hadn't been done mm-hmm. since the 70s. But it did seem to work. It took the sting out of it, and it was able to rally the troops. And what it did mean is that it wasn't hanging over the government. If Padraig Tobin had done it differently, kept a degree of intrigue until tomorrow morning, which is the deadline, which is normally done, that would have run through the weekend and would have been something that would have been there next Tuesday. There may not be anything now. Indeed, what you're looking at next week in the Dáil, I think, is a Dáil without any votes, practically no business, and won't sit on Thursday. So essentially the deck's been cleared for the presidential election.
Something that Sinn Féin's Pádraig McLaughlin was raising. He's the party's whip and saying this is another example. He thought twofold. One is an example of a do-nothing Dáil, but secondly, that he felt it was the opposition parties weren't going to have the light on them. And it was a suggestion that this was another ruse by the government in the context of a presidential election.
There is a certain flatness to the Dáil agenda at the moment, isn't there? But I mean, it's been apart from things like the confidence motion, do you know what I mean? And everybody troops in and you have a lot. But in terms of legislation, you're still waiting on the big infrastructure plan. You're still waiting on the big housing plan.
5 or 6 weeks.
The occupied territories isn't back before the Dáil. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the big points of contention, it's like a lot of stuff is being processed every week. It's all very important. Everyone's working away. But
no, you don't have a sense of, you know, a legislative vanguard. We are going to change. This is what we're going to do it, and we're going to do it now. And when we've got that done, we've got something else coming in behind. That isn't present in the Dáil. And I think that echoes through the previous months as well. The government says it does have, you know, its priority legislation and you're going to see it coming thick and fast. But that there isn't a sense of that, at least. And whether it's when you look at the readouts from Cabinet or where you're sitting here watching proceedings.
And I suppose it's heightened by the fact that the promises were so flahoolock, weren't they, in the budget and what you're in the election, which isn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. And then you're seeing a budget that is at odds with that. I mean, that's what it is. Government insisting it's the first of five. But Marie Sherlock in Leaders' Questions today.
And a lot of action plans and reviews. Yes, and, you know, that may come next year. Yeah. And we're looking at how we're going to bring down the course of cost of childcare. But that involves an action plan and that's being put
together. And childcare was the one under discussion today, and the lack of urgency is what Marie Sherlock was talking about. Equally then, when it comes to the energy issue, the opposition, particularly Sinn Féin, focusing all week on that you have 300,000 mm-hmm. people in electricity arrears, a million households will be facing an electricity hike in the next month. But when it comes to the big issue around that, apart from the very obvious help that people need and the debate on that, those kind of structural changes and the fact that you do have a committee in Dara O'Brien's department meant to look at this and giving the regulator perhaps greater powers, no indication that that's going to happen anytime soon. Indeed, it was said that there would be interim findings before the budget and that would feed into the budget. That doesn't seem to have happened yet. And it was something that was fairly high in the party manifestos. But until that happens, there won't be real change.
And Micheál Martin trying to answer those charges this week in terms of, you know, in particular the cost of energy and why Ireland's cost of energy and the gap between the wholesale and the retail price.
The eighth most
Ireland.
Expensive in the EU, yeah.
And he was trying to say it's on account of gas and it's on account of the grid and there are all these structural reasons.
Our fossil fuel imports.
But the reality for people is they, you know, every time they go to the supermarket, they see their bills going up. Every time those electricity bills are coming in, they see that they're going up. And the housing thing seems to be getting more bleak by the day. So a sense that, you know, the government is talking a lot, but it's hard to see the Dáil being moved clearly on any of those issues, which is giving the opposition a lot of grist to their mill anyway.
Yeah, and I think you saw in the confidence motion, I suppose, which was an unusual confidence motion in the sense that there was such tragedy in it, the death of Harvey Morrison Sherratt during the summer, like really a central part of all of that. Yeah. So you didn't have the same kind of fiery debate that you might normally get. But I think you did get from some on the government side, certainly towards the end of it, a sense of being fairly self-satisfied, and self-satisfied primarily because they're saying they're going to be there for a very long time and they're working hard at their work. But but without that urgency or that sense that things are going to happen soon.
I think it's worth picking up on that, so that proof of that came in the fact that they handily won the vote when it came to confidence in Simon Harris. But the issues which were being raised, indeed on both sides of the House, about disability, payments, waiting lists, treatments, there was no sense that any of that is going to go away. So it's, they've won one battle, but it's a long war. Yes. And it's going to be thrown back at them month after month as the latest data comes out.
And I mean, people with disabilities saying that they are worse off because of the fact that the universal payments are gone. And yes, Micheál Martin has said on a few occasions this week that he seems to be identifying improving disability services as a real legacy point for him, which probably is a little difficult to take for people who have a disability watching the latest budget.
I just would add on to that is that it seemed when it came to the payments would be sorted next September, which still I haven't heard a convincing argument. If it's going to happen next September, why discontinue it now? Why not just let it roll over so you've got a seamless change?
And on the scoliosis and Harvey Morrison, Sherratt's name being mentioned so often in that debate, certain people saying you shouldn't be using a tragedy like that to score political points. Ken O'Flynn, I think, was one of those making that argument, and Michael Lowry as well. But then when you heard, you know, a number of the speakers on the government side almost talk smugly, I'm sure they didn't intend it that way, but it, there was something about that debate that jarred, given what we're talking about and given that we still don't know what went wrong when so much money was given, when so many commitments were made. We know COVID came along and all the rest, but then we've learned since about the issues with hip dysplasia and management within Children's Health Ireland. And there have been various reviews. I don't know what stage they're all at, but we still don't have clear answers.
Yes. And I suppose when you do look at the central charge away from the great tragedy of this, and it goes back to that promise by Simon Harris when he was health minister of the four-month guarantee that people would only have to wait that long. And now he's saying that's made in good faith. Micheál Martin saying good faith was the key word.
Wasn't that one of the lines he used yesterday? He was told that by the HSE.
By the HSE, yes. But you see, you cannot really isolate the fact that Simon Harris is someone who does like headlines, who does like things neatly put and neat solutions to be arrived at very swiftly. Now, his colleagues yesterday were saying he's someone who can change things. I think it was one of the ministers stood up and saying it wasn't his fault. It was the fact that the structures couldn't move with his level of vision. But at the same time, his level of vision did get him a lot of positive headlines at the time. And I think that probably can't be forgotten in all of that. When you do look at something that could happen and could make a difference now, and Micheál Martin and Jennifer Karen McNeill both talking about this yesterday, they're talking about the interaction between the people in orthopaedics and parents and how that has to change and the balance has to change. Jennifer Karen McNeill saying parents nearly always know best, they're nearly always right, and they have to be listened to. How a government is going to deliver that cultural change, though, is going to be a challenge. But that does seem to be one of the things that could happen out of this.
And those things aren't, you know, You have medical authorities involved there. You have, you know, clinical governance in medical institutions involved there. That was also one of the questions coming out of yesterday's motion and in this whole row about what went wrong with the whole scoliosis issue, which still is not solved. Still far too many people waiting far too long. And you could hear, you know, the passion and the contributions from TDs who've become close with many of these families who've been suffering in this way for so long.
Yes, and no obvious kind of path, if you want to say, or solution to the waiting times presented yesterday. What was being spoken about was obviously the inquiry and just how strong or not that's going to be. That would change the governance structures. But no one really stood up and said that they were going to get on top of the waiting times.
Although there was a reference to a new surgeon coming in place since August, and that had an impact. Calculable, but you know, not massive, but a calculable difference. So there was some reference, but that's what it seems to be, is how can you find the staff who are able to do the work that needs to be done as soon as it needs to be done, rather than having these children waiting and all that time their condition disimproving.
Anything else that we should note from the week just gone?
I think the Public Accounts Committee were kind of dealing with one of the fallouts from COVID and the fact that there is a lot of equipment and a lot of that protective gear that is there now. And it has an air and a lot of similarities to the electronic voting machines. I think what you have is expenditure that was excessive at the time now, but that probably couldn't be known. But there's also huge storage costs as well.
Yeah, although I'm not sure it's a fair comparison, is it? Because the electronic voting machines was a political decision that was chosen, whereas, you know, this was material that was being looked for at a time in a pandemic.
Rather than Bertie Ahern's dislike of the old Pian Louis.
Yeah. For me, it was the shake-up for the Social Democrats. They rejigged their front bench and Owen Hayes came back. He's now social protection spokesperson, so you can see him coming in from the cold. And then
Sinead, has been speaking a lot this week.
He has,
sported a bow tie yesterday.
Exactly. And then Sinead Gibney is getting defence, but she's got about six or seven other things part of her title. And then, interestingly, they've decided to make their Shannon spokesperson their foreign affairs spokesperson coming from the Shannon. So that's a rather sort of different thing, which I haven't seen before. So okay. Let's see how those things, because obviously foreign affairs and defence are key issues at the moment, but they didn't seem to be prioritised.
And is this Holly Cairns putting her stamp back on the party now that she's back off maternity leave?
She's a leader, so this is her team, yeah.
All righty. So that's it. Will we be talking to you next week on the eve of poll? I don't know whether we will
probably.
Or we won't. Probably.
Probably.
We'll be
probably.
Here. There'll be unless no dog, but we'll be here.
Yes, unless there's some reason not happening. To talk we'll to you here. For electoral reasons. Otherwise, we promise we will be here. We'll talk to you again then. And we'll probably do something over that weekend, won't we? The weekend of the count.
Cause yes.
Why wouldn't you?
Just for the crack.
Exactly. All right. So lots to talk about. Talk soon. Bye-bye.